Hello, this is Chris with the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, March 3rd. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. $211 million budget up for vote, planned down 5.28% from 2025, art station on the agenda from normal. The Normal Town Council will consider a $211 million budget for fiscal year 2026 and transferring ownership of Illinois Art Station to the town. The council today will vote on the budget, which reflects a 5.38% decrease from the current year's estimated $223 million budget. As previously reported on January 22nd, town staff said it is taking a conservative approach when it comes to future years. They expect lower sales tax revenue and are planning to reduce the number of transfers from the general fund, which covers most operating expenses, capital projects, saving for contingencies, economic development plans, and extra pension funding. According to town documents, state and local sales taxes comprise approximately 40% of the general fund's revenue. Estimates call for $15.33 million from the state and $22.31 million from the local side, for a total of $37.64 million in the coming budget, which is down from about $40 million in the current fiscal 2025 budget. The total revenue expected for the general fund in fiscal year 26 is about $96.07 million. The fund for building the Uptown Underpass is expected to be $19 million, while the water and sewer funds are expected to be $17 and $9 million, respectively. The town expects to spend $9 million on police and fire pension funds, which are on track to be paid in full by 2040 and should result in lower annual payments. Other expenses include $8 million on roads and $6 million on debt payments in the next fiscal year, according to town documents. A public hearing on the proposed budget will be held prior to the meeting at 6:55 p.m. tonight. In other news, the council will consider the donation of the land, building, assets, and organization of the Illinois Art Station to the town. According to town documents, the Illinois Art Station Board and Foundation approached the town about the donation and are planning for a future that would increase the organization's reach and further its mission. Assets to be transferred would include the property, facilities including furnishings and equipment, and the parking lot located at 101 East Vernon Avenue. The organization and intellectual property, including lesson plans and programming materials, would also be transferred to the town. The potential transfer would create a public art education facility in town while maintaining the Illinois Art Station name, according to town documents. The Illinois Art Station is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing visual art education and experiences to Normal residents and visitors, and was founded by Laura Burke as an outreach program within the College of Arts and Sciences at Illinois State University. Under the proposed donation, the town would agree to maintain, for a period of 20 years, art education programming, which includes providing visual art education to children and families with deliberate efforts to reach underserved populations for around 75% of programming time. The facility and grounds may be used for other community purposes for the remaining programming time. Additionally, the town would agree to retain the property and use it for community purposes for 70 years. Staff anticipates a net annual expense of approximately $175,000. If approved, town staff would work with the Illinois Art Station Board and Foundation to begin the transition process, targeting April 1st as the closing date for the real estate transfer. The council will also vote on the following: awarding a contract, a J.G. Stewart Contractors, Inc. for the 2025 Miscellaneous Sidewalk Improvements 50/50 sidewalk and ADA ramps project for $738,000. Authorizing a contract with Hare Construction for the 2024 sanitary sewer lining contract for $1,400,000. Awarding the bid water main and service line materials to Ferguson Waterworks of DeKalb for $465,000. And finally, authorizing a contract for the supply of electricity for the town's electric aggregation program for residential and small commercial retail customers. The council meets at 7 p.m. tonight on the fourth floor of Uptown Station. Council meetings are also live streamed on the town's YouTube channel. Also on the front page, bad flu season raises concerns. CDC, 19,000 dead, kids' brain disorder seen. From Washington. This year's harsh flu season, the most intense in 15 years, has federal health officials trying to understand if it sparked an increase in a rare but life-threatening brain complication in children. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates 19,000 people died from the flu so far this winter, including 86 children. Thursday, the CDC reported at least 9 of those children experienced brain complications, and it asked state health departments to help investigate if there are more such cases. There is some good news. The CDC also reported that this year's flu shots do a pretty good job preventing hospitalization from the flu among the 45% of Americans who got vaccinated. That announcement came a day after the Trump administration added to the uncertainty roiling government health agencies by canceling a meeting of experts who are supposed to help choose the recipe for next year's flu vaccine. Still, it's not too late to get vaccinated this year. If you haven't gotten your flu shot yet, get it, because we're still seeing high flu circulation in most of the country, said Dr. Sean O'Leary of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Flu shot effectiveness varies from year to year. While not great at blocking infections, the vaccine's main role is to keep you out of the hospital and to keep you alive, Vanderbilt University vaccine expert Dr. Schaefer said. Preliminary CDC data released Thursday found children who got this year's vaccine were between 64 and 78% less likely to be hospitalized than their unvaccinated counterparts, and adults were 41 to 55% less likely to be hospitalized. What about those brain complications? Earlier this month, state health departments and hospitals warned doctors to watch for child flu patients with seizures, hallucinations, or other signs of influenza-associated encephalitis, and a more severe subtype called acute necrotizing encephalitis. Encephalitis is brain inflammation. The CDC released an analysis Thursday of 1,840 child flu deaths since 2010, finding 166 with those neurologic complications. Most were unvaccinated. The agency concluded it's unclear if this year's 9 deaths were those complications, 4 of whom had the worst subtype, mark an uptick. There's no regular tracking of those neurologic complications, making it hard to find the answers. In California, Dr. Van Heren of Stanford Medicine Children's Health said earlier in February he'd learned of about 15 flu-related cases of that severe subtype from doctors around the country, and we are aware of more cases that may also meet the criteria. He did not say how many died. O'Leary said the Pediatricians Academy said parents should remember this complication is rare. The advice remains to seek medical advice anytime a child with flu has unusual or concerning symptoms, such as labored breathing. Doctors see more neurologic complications during severe flu seasons, and they may be linked to particular influenza strains, and survivors can have ongoing seizures or other lingering problems. Meanwhile, vaccine makers already are gearing up for the months-long process of brewing next winter's flu shots. A Food and Drug Administration advisory committee was supposed to meet on March 13th to help choose which flu strains to include, but With that meeting's cancellation, it's unclear if the government will decide on its own. We have historically worked really hard to get transparency around all of these vaccine discussions, said O'Leary, who said it's important for the public to understand what goes into making decisions about the flu vaccine composition and other vaccine recommendations. The FDA will make public its recommendations to manufacturers in time for updated vaccines to be available for the 2025-26 influenza season. Also from Washington, GOP looks to slash $2 trillion in spending. Now that the House Republicans passed an ambitious budget blueprint for Trump's agenda, it's time for the hard work of turning ideas for $4.5 trillion in tax cuts and $2 trillion of slash spending into a bill that lawmakers warned could bring intense changes to Americans. Republicans insist the costs of the tax breaks be partly paid for by steep reductions in federal government spending as a way to ensure the nation's $36 trillion debt load doesn't balloon to dangerous levels. Deciding what to cut, health care, food stamps, green energy, government regulations, or student aid, is a politically agonizing choice. GOP senators have their own plans. Their priority is to make the tax cuts permanent rather than temporary, which would skyrocket the costs. Eventually, the House and Senate must vote on a single package. We have a lot of hard work ahead of us, Speaker Johnson said after the late Tuesday vote. The process is expected to consume Congress for weeks, if not months, as Republicans try to deliver on Trump's agenda and their own campaign promises. Republicans say that if they fail to act, the lower tax rates first approved in 2017 will expire, which would amount to a massive tax hike for many Americans. They believe the tax cuts will partly pay for themselves, unleashing economic growth and fresh revenues, though others say those projections are optimistic. Democrats put up stiff opposition against the House GOP plan. One lawmaker dashed from California after a week's stay in the hospital, and another returned to Washington for the vote with her newborn son. Democrats will spend the week ahead warning Americans what's at stake. Republicans and Trump promised to lower costs on day one, and instead their priorities have been focused on ripping health care away from kids, moms, and others who need it most, said Brittany Peterson, Democrat from Colorado, cradling her four-week-old son, Sam. To fund tax breaks for billionaires like Elon Musk while increasing our national deficit by trillions of dollars. How can anyone show their face in their district after voting yes for this? Trump, during a cabinet meeting Wednesday at the White House, insisted he will not touch the nation's premier safety net programs, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, but seek ways to root out what Republicans call waste, fraud, and abuse. It won't be read my lips anymore, Trump said, echoing George Bush's no tax pledge. We're not going to touch it. But the math doesn't add up. Without steep cuts to federal programs, Republicans won't be able to claim the savings they need to offset the costs of the tax breaks. Without offsetting the costs, conservative GOP lawmakers won't want to vote for the final package. GOP senators met behind closed doors Wednesday with White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles on next steps. Initially approved during Trump's first term, many of the tax cuts expire later this year. Keeping them would cost $4.5 trillion over the next decade or more if they are made permanent. The president also wants to eliminate taxes on tips, which was a signature campaign promise, and also talked about getting rid of taxes on overtime pay as well as Social Security benefits. Those would add to the price tag. Senate Majority Leader John Thune said it's to be determined when the Senate would act on the House budget resolution. Nothing about this is going to be easy, he said. With reductions to the Pentagon off the table, Republicans are hunting for cost-cutting across the non-defense side of the budget. The next biggest pot of money available is the nation's health care programs. The House GOP's bill directed the committee that handles Medicaid health care spending to come up with $880 billion in savings over the next decade, the bulk of what's needed to offset the cost of the tax breaks. Republicans insist there will be no direct cuts to people who receive their health care through Medicaid, some 80 million adults and children, and that they only will target waste, fraud, and abuse to make it more efficient. Mostly, Republicans talk about imposing work requirements or removing able-bodied men from the government-run Medicaid program. Doing that would save a small portion of what's needed, about $100 billion over the decade. For a bigger savings, Republicans consider altering the way the federal government provides Medicaid money to the states. About 40 states expanded their Medicaid programs with the Affordable Care Act, which provided money to enroll people in the program. The Republicans also directed the House Agriculture Committee to come up with about $230 billion in savings. One likely place it will turn is the Supplemental Nutrition and Assistance Program. GOP Chair Representative Glenn Thompson of Pennsylvania said food stamps won't be cut. Democrats and advocacy groups started showing up at town hall meetings to protest. The enormity of program cuts called for by the House budget stand as a singular threat to the well-being of people in every state, city, and rural community, Sharon Parrott, president of the Center-Left Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, said after the vote. From the local page, bill to help first-time home buyers with down payment tax savings from Springfield. As the cost of housing continues to rise, Illinois real estate agents are pushing legislation to make it easier for first-time home buyers to save for a down payment. Senate Bill 148 would enable Illinois residents to open a special kind of savings account that could only be used to pay eligible costs for the purchase of a single-family residence. Deposits into those accounts would be deductible from state income taxes with some limitations. The deductions would be limited to $5,000 per year for individuals and $10,000 per year for joint accounts up to maximum aggregate amounts of $25,000 per individual and $50,000 for joint accounts over a 10-year period. The accounts would be available to Illinois residents who have not owned or purchased, either individually or jointly, a single-family residence during the prior 10 years. That would include both first-time and second-chance buyers, people who may have purchased a home previously and now want to get into the ownership market again. When you look at the median sales price of a home in Illinois in 2024, it was almost $300,000. Senator Christine Castro of Elgin said during a news conference on Thursday. That's 8% higher than in 2023, almost 40% higher than in 2019. So you can see the rapid rising costs of homes. Jim Clayton, senior director of the state government affairs for the trade group Illinois Realtors, said the bill is one of several initiatives the industry has introduced this year to help alleviate the burden of rising home prices. The bill has been assigned to the Senate Revenue Committee and is awaiting further action. Senate Republicans push property tax relief measures. Senate Republicans are urging a passage of a handful of bills they say are aimed at providing property tax relief to Illinois homeowners, something they say Governor Pritzker did not address in his budget proposal last week. He talked about affordable housing, said Jill Tacey during a State House news conference on Thursday, and yes, that's very necessary. First-time homeowners are facing difficulties in buying homes because what you have to consider most of all is, can you make the property tax payment? You can't address affordable housing unless you first address what's going on with Illinois' high property tax and high property tax amounts. Senator Chapin Rose is sponsoring Senate Bill 2246, which would put a cap increase in the assessed valuation of residential property to the rate of inflation over the previous 12 months. He said it would help bridge the rapidly increasing gap between what senior homeowners collect from Social Security and the increasing amounts they're being charged for property taxes. This is real. This is hurting people, and it's all scalable. Whether you live in a $100,000 home or a $200,000 home or a $4,000 home, it's becoming unaffordable. The bill has not yet been assigned to a committee. And from Joliet, landlord guilty of hate crime. A jury found an Illinois landlord guilty of murder and hate crime charges Friday for the brutal killing of a 6-year-old whose mother rented rooms in the man's home, an attack that spiked fears over anti-Muslim discrimination in the earliest days of the war in Gaza. Joseph Zumba, 73, was charged in the fatal stabbing of Wadi Yaomi and the wounding of his mother, Hannah, on October 14, 2023, in Plainfield, about 40 miles from Chicago. Authorities allege the family was targeted because of their Islamic faith and as a response to the war between Israel and Hamas that erupted on October 7, 2023. Jurors deliberated less than 90 minutes before returning with the verdict. "I don't know if I should be pleased or upset, if I should be crying or laughing," Wadi's father, Odai, said at a news conference speaking in Arabic. "People are telling me to smile. Maybe if I were one of you, I would be smiling, but I'm the father of the child, and I've lost the child. And I feel like this decision came a little too late." Ben Crump, the national civil rights attorney representing Shaheen, released a statement calling the verdict a measure of justice. Wadi was an innocent 6-year-old child whose life was stolen in an act of unimaginable violence fueled by hatred. "While we are relieved that his killer has been held accountable, we must continue to stand against the rising tide of hate that led to this senseless act. We must honor Wadi's memory by continuing to fight against hate in all its forms and working toward a future where every child is safe, valued, and free from violence." Crump asked that the media continue respecting Shaheen's privacy as she honors her son's memory. Shaheen did not speak at a press conference following the jury decision. Ahem Rabab, executive director of the Civil Rights Group Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, Chicago, said it was too difficult for her and added that she only prays for peace and love. The trial featured detailed testimony from police officers, medical workers, Chuba's ex-wife, and Shaheen, who described how Zuba attacked her with a knife before going after her son in a different room. Prosecutors say the child had been stabbed 26 times. He was found naked with a knife still in his side. And police say one hurt in normal shooting. Police are investigating a shooting that left one person injured in an unknown condition early Sunday in Normal. Officers responded to the 600 block of South Linden Street after a report of shots fired around 3:20 a.m., according to a statement from the Normal Police Department. Initial callers said they heard multiple shots. Police secured the area, spoke with several witnesses, and located evidence of a shooting. While on the scene, officers were told about a possible gunshot victim who had been taken to a local hospital. Police went to the hospital and learned that a male had been struck by gunfire, noting that his condition remained unknown. The department is working to identify potential suspects. Anyone with information on this case is asked to contact Detective Bruno at 309-454-9535. Private lander touches down on moon from Cape Canaveral, Florida. A private lunar lander carrying a drill, vacuum, and other experiments for NASA touched down on the moon Sunday, the latest in a string of companies looking to kickstart business on Earth's celestial neighbor ahead of astronaut missions. Firefly Aerospace Blue Ghost lander descended from the lunar orbit on autopilot, aiming for the slopes of an ancient volcanic volcanic dome in an impact basin on the moon's northeastern edge of the near side. Confirmation of successful touchdown came from the company's mission control outside Austin, Texas, following the action some 225,000 miles away. "You all stuck the landing. We're on the moon," Firefly's Will Cogan, chief engineer for the lander, reported. "An upright and stable landing makes Firefly, a startup founded a decade ago, the first private outfit to put a spacecraft on the moon without crashing or falling over. Even countries have faltered, with only five claiming success: Russia, the U.S., China, India, and Japan." A half hour after landing, Blue Ghost started to send back pictures from the surface, the first one a selfie somewhat obscured by the sun's glare. The second shot included the home planet, a blue dot glimmering in the blackness of space. Two other companies' landers are hot on Blue Ghost's heels, with the next one expected to join in on the moon later this week. Blue Ghost, named after a rare U.S. species of fireflies, had its size and shape going for it. The squat four-legged lander stands 6 foot 6 inches tall and 11 feet wide, providing extra stability, according to the company. Launched in mid-January from Florida, the lander carried 10 experiments to the moon for NASA. The space agency paid $101 million for the delivery, plus $44 million for the science and tech on board. It's the third mission under NASA's Commercial Lunar Delivery Program, intended to ignite a lunar economy of competing private businesses while scouting around for astronauts, or before astronauts show up later this decade. Firefly's Ray Ellsworth said the lander skipped over hazards, including boulders, to land safely. Ellsworth said the team continued to analyze the data to figure out the lander's exact position, but all indications suggest it landed within the 328-foot target zone in Mare Crisium. The demos should get 2 weeks of runtime before lunar daytime ends and the lander shuts down. It carried a vacuum to suck up moon dirt for analysis and a drill to measure temperature as deep as 10 feet below the surface. Also on board, a device for eliminating abrasive lunar dust, a scourge for NASA's long-ago Apollo moonwalkers who got it caked all over their spacesuits and equipment. And from the Veterans Corner, Freedom Sings USA returning to Hayworth. Freedom Sings USA will return to Hayworth for their second annual Veterans Retreat June 17th and 18th. Freedom Sings USA provides a program to assist veterans in dealing with the aftermath of military service in high-stress environments. Professional songwriters will meet with selected area veterans to tell their stories through the creative process of songwriting. On Wednesday the 18th, there will be a free public concert at Hayworth American Legion Post 624. You will hear the songs written with these veterans, songs that had not even existed that morning. In support of this great event for veterans, join the local chapter of Freedom Sings USA from 5 to 8 p.m. March 12th at Bloomington's Pizza Ranch Community Impact Night. This will commence the organization's fundraising. Enjoy a delicious meal. For more information, call 309-530-2613. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, March 3rd. Please stay tuned.